Hey y'all, before we start this week's episode, I want to give you a heads up. The audio was a little wonky. My guest and I were at different locations, so you will hear a difference between her volume and mine, but we got through it. So let's get into it. Episode 9 of the Coaching Through podcast starts now. Welcome to the Coaching Through podcast, where we covering people pleasers, codependent, and lack of boundary doers, hang out, be vulnerable, and take healing by the hand and say, let's go. I am your host, Vernisa Williams, aka V, MSW, therapist, and coach. And it is my honor to bring Coaching Through to the podcast realm to create a safe space for women to work through their healing by reclaiming their voice. I am a single mom, grandmother, Christ believer, divorcee, social worker, and plant mom. We will coach through the topics of people pleasing, boundaries, being codependent, and much more. Mina is a woman who has a story to tell. At a young age and throughout her life, she experienced rejection, multiple life transitions, curveball after curveball, and trauma. But through all of that, she found redemption, a love that was always present, forgiveness, and her voice. So get comfy as you listen to the single mother of two share her story. And near the end, she has a message just for you. Mina, I am so excited that you made the decision to come visit us on the podcast today. Thank you so much. So before the podcast, we talked a little bit about what you are willing to share. I'm just going to give you the floor and we'll have a conversation. I think it's important to bring people on so that they can share their life perspective and how that it is a journey for us to reclaim our voice. Let's start. So Mina, where would you like to begin sharing your journey with us?
I would definitely say my journey began at the age of four years old. I was born and raised in Philadelphia. My mother and father are from Africa. They came over to America, and then they had with my three older siblings, and then they had me and three other of my siblings, but they couldn't take care of us, basically. They had to learn English. They had to adapt to life in America, so we were placed in foster care. So I moved around from home to home until the age of 4 years old. I was placed in a home with just a loving woman by the name of Ann Casey. She is phenomenal. She couldn't have kids and she prayed for a child. And I believe that I got sent to her for a reason.
Wow.
So just having that exposure to the foster care system, having parents, but not really having parents in a sense, and having that love that I needed, I got it from her. I got it from my foster mom. When I tell you, she molded me into who I was. I had no idea, even at the age of four, I had no idea what love was. I had no idea what a hug was. She gave me that. So I was raised in foster care from the age of 4 to 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And then I went back with my mother when I was 16. That transition, when you come from somebody who you see as your mom to go back to your birth mom, that's a hard thing, because you feel like your own birth mom doesn't know you and you're trying to prove yourself to them, or you guys are learning each other already. So that's basically what happened. Like, I was in this house with my birth mom, but she didn't know me. My foster mom knew me, and we didn't know how to really communicate to one another. It was always hard. I always just wanted to just leave and go back to my foster mom. But then I began to, you know, I was a teenager at the time, so I learned how to get on public transportation because I was kind of spoiled. Mm-hmm. Being in foster care, I was definitely spoiled. So, But I actually had anxieties about getting on something because noise and the people, I wasn't used to that exposure. So being raised and I guess in the city and traveling from South Philly to Germantown to go to school. And Germantown was rough back then. It was a rough school, but somehow I survived it. I did. I survived it, got through it. And I didn't do what everybody else was doing. I had girlfriends that were into, you know, sleeping with guys already at a young age and things like that. But I wasn't. That wasn't me. Mm-hmm. I saw things that were going on, violence and things, but I just didn't take part in it. And I thank God for that now. So, and I think at that time, I was still trying to find out who I was. in my high school years. I was still trying to figure out my style, my voice, just who was Mina, basically. So I lived with my mom for many, many years until about the age of 20. Here's another thing. When I was in my 20s, that's when I kind of started to feel myself. I went away to Job Corps just to get away from home. Basically, where I felt like nobody knew me, like my own family didn't really know me. Mm-hmm. I just decided to go to Job Corps in West Virginia. And that's where things took a spin. That's where I lost my virginity. I began to drink. And as I look back, it's kind of painful to think about, because that time when I was in my 20s, it was like a spiral. Like my life was just kind of control. Alcohol, parties, boys, men. It was a lot going on. And as I look back, I was really trying to find my voice in different things and different people. Mm-hmm. So then at the age of 25, that's when everything took a different turn. I became pregnant with my first son. And you would think that would wake somebody up, like, all right, slow down. But I think that couldn't even wake me up, because I was still on this fast pace of trying to find out who I was. And I was giving myself reasons to do certain things. Like, you know what, you deserve to act like this because of this in your life. Sometimes we push ourselves towards negativity because that's kind of all we know. That's right. How we coach ourselves to be negative in a comfortable way. I had nobody to look up to. I always had my foster mom, though. So she was definitely always around and a phone call away, and I would still go visit her. But, you know, I'm an adult, so I wanted to do what I wanted to do. So I became pregnant with my first son, and his father decided he didn't want to help. He was in Philadelphia. He's Jamaican, but he decided he wanted to take part in a whole nother family. So I think that was also like a hit in the gut. And something I also had to deal with, along with still trying to find out who I was. So here I am, this single mom, having to raise this child. Still don't know my own identity. Haven't figured that out yet, but I have to raise a child and help this child figure out who they are. Mm-hmm. So it was very, very different, but I got used to it. And I just got used to the fact that I felt like it was just trauma piling on top of more trauma, like different things. So my mom wasn't very comforting when I came home and I came out with the news that I was having a baby. The first thing she said was, okay, well, when are you moving out? I remember when she said that, I ran upstairs in my room, shut the door, and I cried. I cried my eyes out. Mm-hmm. It's actually still hard to think about. Because, you know, you just want that hug. You don't know. It's like my first pregnancy. I need help. I don't know what to do.
Right. You need a mother.
I need a mom. I realized that I made a mistake, and I realized that, you know, it's not the perfect time, but at the same time, I need help with dealing with what I was dealing with, and I didn't get that from her. Now, of course, my foster mom gave me all the comfort in the world, and she said, I'm going to walk with you through this. You're going to be okay. Because I just wanted to get an abortion. I really did. I was like, I can't do this. But then when I figured out what an abortion was and I looked it up and things, I can't do that to my body. It's something in my mind that just wouldn't let me do it.
Yeah.
And thank God for that. My foster mom was there for me, and I just needed that. I needed that comfort. So as I was getting this journey on motherhood, learning about babies, learning about diapers, learning about how to care for a little human being, it was an eye-opener for me. But there was still that part of me that did not want to sit still. It was still that part of me that needed some type of quick gratification or quick understanding or quick comfort and an outlet. So as my son got older, he began to go away on the weekends. Me and his father's family became kind of close. So his grandma decided to start picking him up on the weekends. And I took that opportunity to continue to party. Like, as soon as he left on Fridays, I was out. I had a cup in my hand. I was gone. I was just out of my mind. And that became my routine. Like, I didn't know how to sit still. I didn't know. If you were to ask me to sit still in quietness, I would look at you like you're insane. Like, how do I do that? I don't want to hear myself. myself think. I don't want to hear myself or feel myself feel. I just want to go.
Yeah.
And not face what I've been through already. If that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense, because especially what you went through, the trauma that you experienced, it's like you don't want to put yourself in a position to think about all those things. And a lot of us, we don't want to. We don't want to experience that. We don't want to deal with it. You know, so no, like it makes a lot of sense. And you had made a good point where you said with the transition between your foster mom and your mom, that you didn't have that. No one was there to help you go through that transition of what that would look like. I'm really curious about, because you mentioned the foster care system and it's so much around that. So did you not have a team? Did you not have a social worker? Did you not have anyone to kind of help you and your foster mom in that process?
I had many social workers.
Okay.
It was like this agency seemed to be a revolving door. Like I had no consistent social worker, but they were all great. They were all great. I can remember them each by name.
Okay.
They were all great, but it was a team. They would come in and help me do things, but it was not like, I don't think there was emotional connection. I think for many of them, it was just a job. Like I was just another name on a form, mm-hmm. I felt like. As I look back now, I was just another child in the system. Mm-hmm. But there was a social worker who I know to this day. He's like, I call him Papa. And me and him are like this, who he just got connected to me and my family, because my other siblings had to go in the foster care system too. And we were all in the same agency. So he just like really had a heart for me and my siblings. So you have some good social workers. You have some social workers who you could just see were just there for the check.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I had a pretty good team. So just learning about being a mom, just learning about how to go to doctor's appointments, the welfare system was all new to me. And I can remember filling out the application for benefits and just standing in line, and my pride, it was something in my chest. I remember that feeling was just like, this is horrible. Like, I think I hit rock bottom. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I didn't hit rock bottom. It's just like, yes, your own welfare, because you need it. And that's just that. You qualify for these benefits. So you got to sit down and fill it out. And I remember just looking around the welfare office and just seeing the different faces of people and the workers that were there. And I was like, is this going to be my life? Am I going to have to keep coming to this office? Mm-hmm. And surely it became my life. And it was a very humbling experience, though. Just like, I think I had a problem asking for help. That's my problem. I was always on the go and I felt like I didn't need no help, but I need help. And I think that filling out that form made me feel less of a person. So I got it done. Then I had to leave my mom. So she began to do some pretty, pretty hurtful things. I would come home and my mattress was outside.
Wow.
And it was wrapped up. It was outside. And at the time, one of my brothers was staying there. He was just like, yeah, mom, just so we can put your mattress out. And I remember feeling like, and I literally did. I would go to work and I would come home. My son would be in daycare. And she was just basically telling me in all types of ways to get out. So I left. But at that time, I met this guy and we were like friends. And I met him because I used to do like online dating, mm-hmm. which is just full of a bunch of mess. But I met this guy and we became friends, and he had this landlord who had this room available. And he was like, for me, he'll give it to me really cheap, because my friend told him my situation. So I moved out immediately and I moved into this house in Germantown, renting out a room. And I remember just being in this room. And I remember the first night I got there just crying. And I was holding my son and just crying and looking around. And I'm just like, I don't know if I can do this. So then, even still, I still didn't stop partying. I still didn't stop trying to look for ways to comfort myself. And I don't think that part of you doesn't ever go away. You just have to change how you comfort yourself. I'll put it that way. Mm. Like the partying, it was dangerous. And I look back and I'm like, I'm glad I'm alive, honestly. So when people say, things like, oh, it's okay to do this, it's okay to do that. It's like, yeah, but you got to have your limits. Yeah. And I didn't have no limits. Yeah. I had none. I'm still spiraling out of control in a quiet way. So this friend of mine, and I have to tell you about him because he also is a part of my life now. Mm-hmm. We became close, but we also became close in a sexual manner. And I felt like a part of my heart was going to, like, was kind of stuck with this man. And it was just like, cause he was comfort. And he was just my friend and comfort. And I told him everything. We would go out, we would do things. So then kind of like fast forward, I got pregnant again by my friend. And this time, another curveball, like I can remember telling him the day I found out after I left that doctor's office. I remember sitting in the doctor's office and there was this big lump in my throat. And I was just like, I did it again. And that's all I could say to myself is I did it again. And then I was just like, who am I going to tell? What am I going to do? I remember these fast, quick thoughts going through my mind, like, oh my gosh, another baby, another human being that I have to raise. But in my mind, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to tell my friend because he's going to be there for me because he's always been there for me. You know, and he's already a father. He has two kids. He'll know what to do. So I called him. And I told him the situation, and his response was, I just need to figure out how I'm going to stay financially afloat. Mm. And I remember sitting back and I looked at the phone in my hand and I was just like, that's not what I expected.
Wrong answer.
And then the phone call stopped. He stopped answering my text messages. He stopped answering me on social media. Mind you, we had the same landlord. He actually lived around the corner. He moved and didn't tell me. He changed his number. He did all these things. This person that I trusted, that I was now pregnant by, disappeared. And I had no idea where he went. Mm-hmm. And that was a dark, dark time for me. I have a human being growing inside of me for the second time. And this person that I thought was my friend, I couldn't tell you where he went. Mm-hmm. I remember just rocking back and forth in my room and I cried, but then I began to pray. There's another side of me that came out. I cried, but then I began to pray because I'm a Christian. So I just got on my knees and I just asked the Lord for forgiveness. And I said, you have always been there for me. I reminded myself of who he was. And I was like, you have never left me nor forsaken me. I left you. I ran to go do what I wanted to do. And these are the results of those things that I wanted to do. I said, but I need your help raising these children in this situation. And so I began to go back to church and I found an amazing church home. And the first time, and I was praying, I said, Lord, show me if you want this to be my church. Give me a sign. The first sermon when I got there was about abortions. I never heard a sermon about abortions. So I'm like 6-7 months sitting in the back trying to be, you know, incognito. Mm-hmm. But you can't really hide when you have a head wrap on in the belly. So that didn't go well. And he's, and mind you, this pastor of mine does not hold any punches. It's not a cute sermon. He's going to teach straight from the word. But I was just like, because I can't have this baby. I can't do it. Where's my support going to come from? And so because of my faith, I was able to raise these boys. And it's actually unbelievable. I don't know how I survived these things. I don't know how I got through them mentally. Because mental health is also, it's a thing. It's a real thing. If you're not healthy mentally, you're not going to be able to move forward. There's times when I literally wanted to kill myself and end it all. And I was like, I don't think this is not the life I want to live. I have no comfort anywhere. I have no peace. And so I began to find my peace in who God is and who he was and who he will always be. I began to move forward and doors started to open. But then another thing happened and I began to struggle with being able to pay my rent. So then I got hit with being homeless. That is another thing that I've experienced. And when I tell you not having a home, that feeling is so, you actually feel like the number zero. Like you feel like you just want to just give up. Like I know what it's like to just not have a place to call home. That's not a good feeling. On top of everything that I've already been through, that's been added to my
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I got to deal with this. But luckily at the time when I had to leave that place, another door opened at this wonderful shelter. And I just fell in love with all these people that were there. And then that door closed. And it's just like, Lord, when are these doors going to stay open?
Yeah, right, right.
What's going on? And it's like, when is that enough is going to be enough? And then you start to look at yourself, though. You start to question, what am I doing to? Am I creating all this? Is God paying me back for the things that I was doing? Is this punishment?
Right. Right.
So then I got placed in the city shelter, which is actually another experience, an eye-opener. Just being in there with different moms, different women, with different issues that I've never even thought anybody could be going through. And be friends with them, like genuine friends with them, and hearing the stories that they've been through. And I'm like, I got the exposure to that. And I kept going. I kept praying. I kept reading my Bible. I remember waking up 6 a.m. And mind you, I was on the floor with like 20, 30 other families, no ceilings. So you hear everything. I was the first to get up every morning to tiptoe. I mind you, I have an infant who cries whenever he wants to. And I had my son.
Right.
And I'm tiptoe past somebody else's room. You have to go to the bathroom to wash up. The lights are still out. Then if the infant starts crying, you have to, you know, take the baby to the front. But mind you, if you're not done getting dressed, then the baby has to come with you. It was a lot, but I kept going. I kept getting these kids up, taking them to daycare, going to work. I remember each morning just walking to the train station and talking to my son and we laughing and joking, and my little one is in the stroller, and I kept going. And then my time at that shelter was up. And something about the shelters, they don't share types of people in the shelters. The people that they can benefit from in place, and then the people that they can't. I was the one that they can't. I didn't have any DHS. I didn't have a domestic violence situation. I didn't have any mental health issues. They couldn't benefit from me. So technically I was okay, regardless if I had a home or not. I was
okay. You were quote unquote okay. So basically because you wasn't okay. That low. You were okay low.
Yeah, I wasn't that low.
Low in their eyes.
Mm-hmm. In their eyes. And I was just like, well, I thought you guys still place people because they don't have a home. I thought that's the whole purpose of people coming to these shelters. And I remember being in a team meeting and them just saying, you know, well, you're working and things like that. And I was like, but I still don't have a home. And it was like, well, you have to find somewhere to go. And I was just like, well, what was the purpose of me coming here? So then I had to call my mother again, the one lady I did not want to call because I still had nowhere to go. So of course, without a doubt, without a thought, she said no and hung up the phone.
Jesus.
So I prayed again, and my church family, I am so thankful for them, because they became my support system. They became a support system that I never saw coming. They became my support system through my pregnancy. They threw me a baby shower, which I knew nothing about. The whole church came. The women there prayed for me, prayed with me. They would call and text me. They would pick me up every single Sunday to come to church to make sure that we had things to eat, things to do on the weekends. Because in the shelters, they put you out on the weekends. Like you have to go somewhere. And then it's like, if you don't go anywhere, you just can stand outside until the time is to come back in. Mm-hmm. But they always made sure I had a place to go. But each weekend I ran back to my Nana, my foster mom. She was my comfort on the weekends. she's the one that when I didn't feel like taking showers and baths at the shelter, we would go there and wash up. We would go there and sleep. I remember one time, and I cried, my son fell asleep in her arms because he was so tired. He couldn't get any rest at the shelter. And she just held him. She made us a big meal. And it was like me being 4 years old all over again. I felt like I was four. I'm sorry.
Let's take a minute. It's okay.
She just had this natural way of always knowing what to say. And the way she loved on my kids, she loved on me. She held no punches with those boys. She would talk to them like she talked to me, like they were her own. She would discipline them, and she would look at me like, I wish you would try to step in, things like that. But she was my comfort, and she's still alive. She's just older now and being taken care of. But I look back, and I realize that as I tried to fight against who I was and find my identity and wild out in a sense, I think the Lord always had a way of showing me where he wanted me to go.
Yeah.
Like, you're trying to go this way, but I'm going to make this happen so we can bring you back over here. Mm-hmm. Like, you're trying to, it's like trying to be that puzzle piece that doesn't fit in. Like, you're not going to wild out. You're not going to keep having these children. You're not going to be that woman that you're going to make yourself become. You're going to be this way. I have a plan and purpose for you, so we're going to go over here. And now I look back, and I'm thankful for all the exposures that I got, because I learned from them. But not only that, I think I learned from them, and I'm glad I did, but I want to talk to other women, and I want to say that I've been there, and I know the feelings, and I want to say I'm able to relate to you in so many ways. And I look back, and as I'm sharing this, I'm realizing I have been through a lot. I have been through a lot. And I also learned about what trauma is. And I realized that I have been through a lot of trauma, and I haven't dealt with that. Trauma is something very real. And it, you know, sometimes it can pile up. It'll keep piling up. And that's basically what's happening, is just trauma after trauma and dealing with things. And I don't know, I've been through a lot, my goodness, just hearing everything that I'm saying, it's been a lot.
You absolutely had a journey, and I want to say a victorious one too, you know. And I do have a question. When you was about to leave the shelter, you said you called your birth mom.
Yeah.
Why do you think you contacted your birth mom? Because we're now talking about trauma, and I think that's important to kind of bring up, because your foster mom is still in your life.
Mm-hmm.
But when you left the shelter, you went back to a traumatic space.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can like unpack that, what do you think your mindset was of why you chose to call your birth mom rather than your foster mom at the time?
So I did that because my foster mom moved from the big house where she used to live at and moved into a one bedroom apartment, and I couldn't move in with her.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I had no other choice. And I was like, I cannot be on the concrete with these kids.
Right.
And I was just like, I don't want to call her. I don't. But I'm just like thinking about the kids. And I'm like, they have to have a roof over their heads. Mm-hmm. So I called her, and she said no. And I remember hanging up, and I remember wanting to throw my cell phone so bad at the wall. And I think just seeing it break and just not being able to contact her would have gave me the biggest peace. But then something happened here about, and mind you, this is the day before I have to leave.
Okay.
So I'm panicking. I'm like pacing back and forth. I'm going through my phone. The kids are playing in the room. They're fine. And I'm just like, I'm the one that's going crazy trying to figure out where we're going to go. She called me back 20 minutes, my birth mom. And she was just like, okay, you can bring them here. You guys can come home. And I was like, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So we came there and I think, oh, then the pandemic hit. So I actually think about that and I'm just like, I can't imagine being in a pandemic in a shelter. And I got out in time. Yeah. And I'm just, I tell that part of the story and I'm glad you asked and I'm just like, the Lord knows what he's doing. He got me out just in time. So I was with my mom and going back there, I saw parts of her that I'd never seen before. She was vulnerable. She was lonely in a sense. Because mind you, we're all grown and everybody else has had their own life, my other siblings. She had no food in the house. And mind you, I'm the one with the food stamps now. So now I'm able to shop for her. I'm able to love on her in ways that I never was able to before. And I was okay with that. And I was okay with her not apologizing for the things she's done. Because in a sense, I didn't need an apology because my peace came from God. So I was okay. I wasn't looking for her to say, I'm sorry for throwing my mattress out because I was at peace. And I saw the Lord moving and I kept hearing him say, love on her, like keep loving on her. Sometimes when you have to love on someone who hurts you, it hurts. It hurts to love on somebody who has hurt you in such a way that you, your own mother, to love on your enemy and not even getting an apology from them or them not seeing how wrong they were.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
That's
so hard. I just began to just it it's hard in so many ways. And not only her, I had to begin to find and to pray to love on the father of my child who disappeared, to love on the other father of my oldest son who decided he didn't want to be a part. There's a lot of people who I felt like has hurt me that I still had to love on these people. And I'm like, these people are the Lord's creation. Just being kind and loving on people that has hurt you is definitely a way to find freedom from that pain.
Say it.
It is definitely a way to that release. It is. It's just like, you can't hurt me anymore. Love you, and I'm okay with, and I'm moving on. I'm not going to let you hurt me again, but I'm also not going to be in this cage of pain that you put me through. It's over.
That is so interesting.
And I realize so many people.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's so interesting that you're mentioning that, because I did a podcast on healing with empathy, right? And how when we're going through the process of healing, for us to not leave dumpster fires and we don't hurt other people while we're trying to heal, and we don't make decisions that will hurt us in the future. So for you to say that the Lord had you to love on the people that basically rejected you, because that's a continuing theme that I'm hearing. But for him to have you to love on people that has left you, that had caused this pain in your life, and for you to still love on them, you know, just how that would help and heal you, giving empathy to other people. That is so powerful.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I'm still learning to this day to continue that, because it's a process. There's days you want to wake up and you want to retaliate. You're like, you know, I'm done loving on you. I'm done. I feel like you should feel how I felt. That's another thing I struggle with, trying to make people feel how I felt. That I wanted to make sure, especially my child's father, I wanted him to feel less of a human being, the same way he made me feel. I wanted him to feel disrespected. I wanted him to feel like a piece of meat. That takes a lot of energy to make somebody do that. That's a lot. And it's pointless. It's pointless when you do that, because what's the purpose?
Yeah,
right. Now you feel like how I feel, and then what?
Right. And you're still left with what was harming you. You're still left with that. And a lot of times I call it a form of self-harm, when we're getting, trying to get someone back that hurt us, we know we're not going to get that nothing in return, but it's only going to add harm to ourselves, you know, because it's like, see, this is why I want to come at you, because this is how you make me feel. But a lot of times they want to live their life. And again, it always comes back to us, right? We're still going to deal with that pain. So it doesn't benefit us at all, but it's still hurt and it's still a real thing.
Yeah, it is. So then the pandemic hit. And so we were in this pandemic and constantly watching the news and constantly trying to figure out what this coronavirus was and things like that. And mind you, I'm still trying to figure out because, you know, I didn't want to be there. That wasn't home for me. That still was not my home. We still were in this room. I had two kids and I'm confined to this room. And so I just began to pray some more. And my birthday came up. Around my birthday, I got a phone call from an apartment that I was trying to, I filled out an application for when I was in the shelter. And they said, hey, the apartment we have for you is ready. You can move in the day after your birthday. When I tell you I got that phone call.
Oh my God.
And this is during the, it's still kind of like the beginning of the pandemic. And I was like, I can move during the pandemic? I didn't care. I was gone.
We're packing everything. And just let's dump it. I was
packing everything. And I remember getting the keys and signing the papers and coming to my apartment and just sitting in the middle floor and I cried. And there's one thing I didn't do, I haven't done a lot enough of, I think it's crying. I'm surprised I still have any tears left. I cried. I walked through every door, every room, and I just looked, I marveled, and I was like, this is home. This is home. And not only that, but this place is closer to my church family too.
Wow. So God gives the best birthday gifts ever.
He sure does.
He is the father that gives the best gifts that no one can even come up with. Like, that's so awesome.
I kept asking. I said, you know, Lord, just provide a home. I kept praying that prayer. And he was like, I hear you. That was his way of saying, I hear you. I hear you. I hear you. I see you. I see you praying. I feel your pain. I see your tears fall. I know how you feel. I know how much you think about wanting a home. And he gave it to us. And then, you know, unemployment started to come in. And I remember shopping for this place. Like, you would have thought I had $1 million. I was so excited to decorate. And I think the most important part was that the boys had a room of their own. I wanted to make them feel comfortable. I wanted to make them feel like they had a home, their own space. So I made sure it was looked like, you know, stars and planets and all these things, and made sure their beds were comfortable and they had extra pillows and they felt warm in the wintertime. And I just wanted them to be comfortable. And then I began to just decorate this place and make it feel like, reflect my personality, just comfortable and soulful and just warm. But I when I tell you, things happen for a reason. But even when we go through things, or when we create a negative situation for ourselves and then a positive thing happens, it's amazing. It's like, I did all this wrong stuff, but now I'm here.
Mercy.
And I don't understand. I did all that stuff and all that partying and all those things. I blacked out so many times. I should probably have like 15, 16 kids right now. And here I am sitting in this apartment. And there's times where when the boys would go to sleep, I would just make a cup of tea and I would sit on my couch and I would just rock back and forth and I would just say thank you. Literally say thank you. And the things that I've been through, I want to share with other people, other women. And I think that's why. And then I got hit with the scholarship to go to school. But to what I got to study for, the scholarship for, to be a social worker, to be that person that goes out and serves other people, to love on other people, to hear other people, to make other people feel seen and heard. I don't want to be a social worker just to say, yeah, I have a career. No, no, no. I want to be a social worker that sits down on the floor with people, that understands and says, hey, let me meet you where you are. Mm-hmm. Tell me your story. What can I do to help you in a way that somebody may not understand? Mm-hmm. And now when I see homeless people, when I see single moms walking around, when I see how frustrated they become, I understand. I can relate. When I see homeless people on the ground, I'm like, I wasn't too far from that. I no longer laugh at that. I'm like, well, what happened since the time this person was born? What happened? Where is this person's parents? How did this get this way?
Yeah.
It's almost like tap on the shoulder and say, what happened? Did anybody not listen to you? Did not anybody not influence you or give you a chance? How are you on the ground with a blanket on in the cup? So I look back and I'm thankful for the things that I've been through, but it made me more aware and more understanding about the things that is going on around me. Yeah. So
that is so amazing. As we're about to end, for all the women that listen to this podcast, because it's predominantly women, what would you want to say to them?
I would first like to say, acknowledge your hurt. Acknowledge that you have some things, or you're going through some things that hurt. Look those things in the face and try to figure out how to heal from those things. I would also like to say, don't give up. It's so easy to do. It's a quick thing to do. Don't give up on whatever. If you have kids, if you're trying to, you know, go towards a career, don't give up. Keep going. Keep going. Sometimes you have to be your own coach. Coach yourself. And I've learned how to do that. When there's nobody patting me on the back, when there's nobody walking with me, you have to do that for yourself. I would definitely say, don't try to find your identity in other things, or if you are searching for your identity in other things and other people, it's going to become dangerous because you'll never know who you are. Find your own voice. Also, I would also like to say, find a hobby. I know having a quiet time and having a hobby also helps me to have that peace. You need that peace as a woman. Also, don't try to be what society says a woman is. I'll put it that way. Or what a woman should dress like. Or what a woman should sound like or walk like. Mm-hmm. Because then you'll just be another robot walking around. Mm-hmm. There's so much more I want to say, but we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, that was so good. Mina, as we continue to close, I'm going to be asking everyone that visits the podcast a question. So you ready?
Mm-hmm.
The question is, what core value has been significant for you on your journey to reclaiming your voice?
I would definitely say church. It has been my core value. I can't even say, oh, me, you know, healing and things like that. I can't speak on that without speaking about God and church and the Bible, because that is where I was able to face myself. That is where I first learned to see my reflection in the mirror and to realize that I've got some yuck inside of me. There's some stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And that I need to leave it at the foot of the cross. And those things that I've been through has already been paid for. And the things that I've done has already been paid for by someone who's already ready to love me. So I felt my identity and I found out who I was in Christ. And that's where I got my peace from. That's how I'm able to understand my story now. As real as it is, that is how I'm able to understand everything I've been through, why I've done what I've done, and what not to do in the future. So that is definitely, because when I started going to church, I woke up, it's like, you know, when some people have allergic reaction, they have to have that EpiPen, and then they wake up.
Yes.
That's how church is for me. That was my EpiPen. I was in this chaotic stage in church. I had that EpiPen in church and in Christ, and I woke up and I was able to breathe. And that's exactly how I would describe it. I was able to breathe. I was able to see.
Yeah. That's so good. Thank you so, so much for just coming and sharing your story. It's a story of victory. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad that you are here, meaning in this world, that everything that you've gone through, you're going to share, and you're going to give all that that you experienced to other women. I salute you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. You're welcome.
God bless you.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
How was that for the first story time? So, so good. So empowering. Raise your hand if Mina's story resonated with you. Now hold your hand up higher if you were encouraged, felt hope rise up within you, and found the strength to continue your journey. Coaching Through Storytime is one of the two series we will have on the show. I hope you will be down for the ride as you continue your journey of reclaiming your voice. Next week is episode 10, and we will be coaching through a part 2 of building your values and core values. I had a light bulb moment this week, and I want to share it with you. So, until we meet again next week, be well and peace out.